Welcome to the Jolly Salamasa. I'm your host, Jochen Heusner, and today I'm talking to Amber LeBeau, who is a wine geek of many talents. She's the person behind the popular Spitbucket blog, has worked in the industry for a long time, and climbed several of the steps on the wine education ladder, having studied with the Society of Wine Educators and currently studying for a WSET Level 4 exam. Last year, she set up the virtual wine events platform that has listed thousands of virtual tastings, webinars, and other online events. So, it's fair to say there are few people that know as much about virtual wine events as Amber. Well, here's Amber LeBeau. Amber, thank you very much for joining me today. It's great to have you here. For those that don't know Amber LeBeau, she's like a person behind spitbucket.net, our blog about wine and everything else. And she's also the founder of virtual wine events. So I think there are very few people, if any, that know as much about virtual wine events, tastings, webinars, and such as she does. She has a long career in wine. And actually, before we get to virtual tastings and the like, I'd like to talk about your background and how you got here to where you are right now.
Thank you. And thank you again for having me. Just kind of the brief rundown with the background. I grew up in the Midwest of the U.S. in Missouri. My grandfather owned a lot of different restaurants, so rite of passage for everybody is working in the restaurants. And as a kid growing up, even before I legally could drink, wine was a little interesting because of the history aspect. I'm a huge history geek, and so discovering things like, oh, this region in Burgundy is tied to Charlemagne, the Romans did all this, that always kind of interested me. But I didn't really like restaurant work. So kind of went off to do other things. And of all the silliness, it's Epcot in Disney World kind of brought me back to wine on that. All the different countries that had their own sections, and each one had its own little wine taste. And it wasn't that good of wine. You know, it's Disney tourist stuff. But I just loved, you know, how the wines in Germany tasted different from the wines over in Italy. And being a geek, you know, I go start reading up on things and kind of actually stumble upon Wikipedia. This was 2006, 2007. And I joined the Wikipedia Wine Project at the time when they were building up the articles. And I was a pretty substantial member there. And a lot of the articles that under the username Agni27, I either wrote completely from scratch the wine articles or completely redid them, you know, like Chardonnay, Cabernet, Barolo.
I've seen that you've published like more than 800 of those. So that's like, apart from the fact that it's just like a lot of content, a lot of your time is like, it's really, you have to, say thanks, because like, you invest a lot of your time and you make this kind of knowledge freely available. And it's like, it's always something that's just great to see. So.
Yeah, and I had a lot of fun doing that. But that was just, again, the start. And so I eventually started finding positions in the wine industry. Working retail was a big one. I've worked at wine shops and grocery stores, then tried out winemaking, went to school for that, and did internships at wineries up in Washington State where I lived at the time. I lived up in Seattle. So Woodinville wineries, worked at several of those. But I found my real passion is actually more towards education. I love teaching about wine. And one of the positions I had, I worked for Total Wine and More, and I was reached their level of Total Wine Professional, and I did a lot of training for the staff. They sent me down to California a couple of times, opening up new markets to teach the wine staff how to, you know, talk about wine, did a lot of consumer classes. And so that's really, I think, my true love of everything in wine is I love teaching. Uh-huh. And so that has led me more towards working towards my diploma, which hopefully I will finish this year. During COVID time. And eventually I'd like to work towards a master of wine. And my big end goal is to start a wine school that focuses in particular on wine education for a lot of the folks that were like me in retail working in the trenches. You know, it takes a lot of money to get these certifications and to taste the wines that you're being, tested on. And it's so hard when you're making minimum wage. Or in the restaurant industry, you know, working on tips. And there's so many people that have that passion to want to move up. And so I want to find a school that and work with scholarships and foundations to provide that.
you just mentioned it's like you're working towards your WSET diploma. It's like, how has the COVID situation changed things for you personally? It's like, it's already quite challenging. But doesn't make it easier, does it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I started actually the diploma when I was in Seattle, and there was nobody at the diploma level qualified to teach there. So I had to do online learning. There was a great provider in Boston I worked with. But at the time, and this was about 6 years ago, I was a really sucky online learner. I just didn't have the focus and concentration to sit through the webinars and things. And so, you know, I was only able to get one unit done, the first unit. And I just waited till I had opportunity to do in-person classes. And when I moved to Europe, in Paris, hopping on the Eurostar to get to London, which they have a great school in London, worked out perfectly. So I started the rest of my diploma in earnest 2 years ago when I moved here. And then COVID kind of disrupted that because I could no longer easily hop on a Eurostar train to get to London. And so I was able to get a few units done before that. And then now I moved here to London. Apologize, getting a little confusing here in October, to hopefully take the classes for my last unit, the D3, the big one. That hasn't been able to happen because of COVID. So I've kind of switched my learning completely online to virtual wine events, to attending webinars, to doing studies like that. COVID kind of forced me to be a better online learner than I was 6 years ago when I first started the diploma. So it made it harder, without a doubt, with the pandemic, but it also made it easier to study. Yeah. Just because you kind of had to with everything, do everything online.
Yeah, I think it's like, I fully agree with you. I think it's easy to get distracted when you're not sitting in the classroom with other people and you have like the person there in front of you talking you through it. But yeah, I suppose it has like two sides. I mean, it's like, it's obviously you're missing out on all those, what I think is also very, very important for me, at least, is like the encounters with other people, like-minded people who is like doing a similar road, like you. You're missing out on that, but like, thanks to, in terms to COVID, there's like so much on offer now online, because the wine industry is something that traditionally is very slow to adapt to the digital world, and it has been produced a lot, so there's much more available right now. So there's also a bright side, I suppose.
Well, and the quality of it has improved as well. Think about where we were 5-6 years ago when there was like online classes. It's pretty much the death by PowerPoint. Yeah. You know, you just have the lecturer recording everything and you just have to play back and try to focus on it. Now with this Zoom world that we lived in, it encourages more of the interaction. It doesn't replace the classroom setting, but you know, with the chat functions and, you know, the person actively looking at the chat and what's going on there, answering questions in live time, that's, you know, has happened a lot more than it has in the past.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, and for you, Spitbucket, your blog was a tool to kind of follow you along your studies. And so you've been using one digital element to support that. And then last year in May, you started virtualwineevents.com, which is kind of like another tool who's kind of doing the same thing for you. It's like it helps you track all the things that are happening out there. And it's like I've seen the stats that you've been sharing on Twitter, and you're very active on social media and on your website. But maybe you can talk us through this, because it's really astonishing.
Yeah, it was interesting. With my blog, Spitbucket, it did start out basically just as a learning tool with me, just kind of my geekiness as an outlet. But a lot of people sort of pick it up on my industry articles, the things I've been posting about with the industry, and it kind of merged a little bit more towards that of an industry focused blog instead of just a study tool. But being very involved in the industry with my background and looking at things from both an industry person as well as also a consumer, because now I'm not actively working, you know, at a retailer or at a winery. I'm just a regular consumer buying wine and drinking wine and experiencing things through that lens. And when the pandemic hit and everything just shut down, you know, a lot of wineries, a lot of retailers, restaurants, everybody's kind of panicking of what to do. And I, again, as a consumer, I'm stuck in my house. I want to do something. I like drinking wine. I can't visit wineries. What can I do? I can't go to a wine bar. What can I do? And so I started looking for these online events that were being offered. And some of them were okay, but a lot of them just sucked hardcore. And this is what put me on the radar with Robert Joseph with the Real Business of Wine is, you know, I wrote an article about, you know, why are virtual wine tastings so sucky? Because I wanted to give the industry that kind of, you know, view of this is what you're providing right now. And some of it works, some of it doesn't. And that's kind of just spiraled from there. You know, started paying more attention to different webinars, and, you know, wineries were pinging me with, you know, hey, let's jump in on our webinar and see what you think about it and see what our virtual tasting is. And so I started doing a little bit of kind of, I guess, freelance consulting, emphasis on free, you know, just basically just doing it just to help out the industry. And I noticed just on my own use of how hard it was to keep track of all these different events, and also how hard it was to find new events to attend. Because unless you were actively following, you know, a winery or an influencer on Instagram or, you know, other social media, you didn't know necessarily that they were doing an event until maybe after it already happened.
Yeah.
And so I was talking with my wife, who has a good tech background, and with her position at the time, she had a lot more free time as well, working from home, about, you know, there's nothing to keep track of these events. You know, there was a couple of bloggers that were doing their own personal calendar, but there wasn't a centralized location to aggregate this. And, you know, she, again, fantastic background. She was able to kind of make the website from scratch. And she found different tools to use in order for us to do this and keep this at a good cost, where we're very low out-of-pocket cost. And I realized I could turn this into a tool for the wine industry to help, you know, promote events from different wineries and different schools and educators and connect them to the consumer, but also to get some good data, good organic feedback. So with virtualwineevents.com, I want to keep it completely free to use. I don't want to really do anything involving ads or sponsored listings. You know, as long as, again, I can do it easily out of my own pocket without, you know, getting a big dent, I don't need to do that. So when somebody goes to the site, clicks on event, they're clicking on it because there's something in that event listing that's interesting them. The title, the picture, the description, the time of day it falls on, the day of the week it falls on. I want to get that feedback of what really gets people to want to click and want to attend an event.
So I think you've mentioned it all already elsewhere. It's like, so, but what actually, so we're seeing like the different types. We're seeing like virtual tastings, basically someone opening up his tasting room. You see the winemaker opening a bottle and talking people through. You see webinars that covers whole regions. You see people doing Instagram live, different types. So what drives people to watching the events that you list on your website?
So I think there's a lot of motivations that drive people to attend these events. And I feel like we have been seeing a shift from when, you know, the pandemic first hit, and everybody was just trying to figure out what to do, versus now is we're slowly merging into our new normal. You know, in the beginning, when everything was locked down, everybody was bored out of their minds, wanting to do something, looking for a distraction. And I think that was the impetus for a lot of people to attend different events, was give me something to do. Instagram Lives were hugely popular, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere spring when everything happened during the pandemic, because that was the perfect distraction element. You know, hey, I can drop in real quick, see what's going on with the chatting. If it interests me, I can stay. If it doesn't, I just pop out. That is just like tanked. The amount of people that have been clicking and looking for Instagram Lives, you know, there's still some, but there was nowhere near the huge interest that we saw in the spring. Instead, I started seeing the shift as we entered the, you know, winter time in the Northern Hemisphere, and now continuing to the new year, of people clicking on more events to look for more details, spending more time on the site, reading the events, looking for things to click versus just finding something easy and then popping off to it. And they're also more likely to be clicking on events that require registration, advanced registration, and paying a fee of some sort. You know, free events still do really well, but how well they were doing in the spring versus how well they're doing now is shrinked a little. The events that offer a really good experience is what people are looking for. So they're moving from a distraction mindset to actively seeking an experience.
I was going to ask from your experience, what are the kind of types that work best? So is it like the winemaker talking about his wines, or is this like some kind of presentation about varietals or regions? But I'm kind of surprised, because with so much on offer that there are a lot of people willing to pay just for the experience, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Rightly so, because a lot of work goes into it, or should go into it. But I think that that's an interesting development.
Yeah. So we've tried to calculate what I call a buzz rating of events on the site based on interactions. So when somebody comes to the page and they start clicking on things, they're clicking on the outbound link to go to wherever, the sign up page or the order the wine page, you know, that adds to the buzz rating. If they share the event on social media, if they click on the host social media tags, because that's help building the branding of the hosting. If they add it to their calendar, because we have easy click calendar links, so you can add to be reminded, or they bookmark it, all those things add to the buzz rating of events. And when I look at the events that tend to have the highest buzz rating, they're events that seem to have a theme tied to it, beyond just virtual tasting with winemaker. It could be an exploration of, you know, the use of oak and Chardonnay. Yeah. You know, they're doing a tasting of their un-oaked Chardonnay and a Chardonnay that has some oak, new oak, a Chardonnay that doesn't have, you know, new oak, you know, some kind of theme. Panels that involve like multiple winemakers from like a region, like Paso Robles in California. They did several Zoom events where they brought different winemakers in, and each week they had a different theme. Like sometimes it was Italian varietals, sometimes it was old vine Zinfandel. You know, talking about the same thing, but a panel of different personalities that got more interest involved. So I think that is really the key of, you know, just if you offer a virtual tasting with the winemaker, unless I'm already interested in that winemaker and in those wines, there's no other reason, there's no other hook to pull me in. And even then, I might absolutely love your wines and attend that event and buy your wines, but that's a one-time thing. If you want to keep pulling me back for the next event, I need more than just virtual tasting with the winemaker. Hmm. I need a new theme. I need a new reason. I need a new experience.
You just mentioned it. It's like, so obviously one of the motivations of people doing these events, wineries, mostly stores, like online platforms as well, is to sell wine. But does that actually translate into selling wine, such events, from your experience?
Does it work? There's some wineries that have done really well with selling, you know, the wines and their packets. Actually Hardy Wallace, who I partnered with for the Outshinery, you know, he's been doing some tremendous stuff with Dirty and Rowdy. Charles Krug up in Napa, they've done a lot of great events, and that they have wine packets involved. It's been really successful. Yeah. I think overall, though, wineries need to take a big picture look. Like the mantra that I have is, you know, sell local. You know, sell the packs when you can, but think global. Mm-hmm. You want to design an event that, you know, having the wine enhances the experience, but doesn't make or break it. You know, I think of it as like, you know, you go to the concert, there's the cheap seats, standing room only, and then you have the VIP, you know, nice seat package. That's kind of what the wine aspect should be. You should still have that standing room only option, because with virtual events, the huge, huge benefit is it's a global reach. Mm. You can reach an audience anywhere in the world. And even though, like here in the UK, I might not be able to access your wine in California, you know, I might not easily get it. Eventually, though, we're going to get back to normal. We're going to travel again. I'm going to have an opportunity to go visit California or visit a market where that wine is sold. And if I have the seeds planted of, I know something about this winery because they had a great event that interested me, I'm more likely to, again, eventually spend money there, eventually buy those wines. You know, that brand building potential is immense. Mm-hmm. And it happens beyond just that event. You know, you have an event today, you're recording that event, upload it to YouTube, use clips of it in your social media. You know, I've yet to see any winery adopt this, but I think this would be absolutely brilliant. When you go to a product page for a wine, I want to know more about this this German Riesling producer. If there was a little clip there, a 30-second clip taken from a virtual tasting of a regular consumer talking about their wine, because a lot of virtual tastings, they invite the audience to share their thoughts on the wine. That's a powerful testimony from a regular, normal person who's having this wine as part of a virtual tasting, sharing their input on it. You know, just a little 30-second clip on a winery website.
Yeah. I think you make like a couple of great points, which I would like to get into. Is like the first one you just raised is like the fact of like actually ordering packages. And there's obviously a strong limitation to that, because like I've watched, I don't know how many virtual tasting, and it's always interesting. And I think it's like, for me, but I'm also very much a wine geek, something to learn about like the specific winery or the winemaker, the techniques that they use. But I think a lot of people are just interested in buying the wine and drinking it, and as it should be, obviously. But I think this is like one of the key obstacles of this model is that, at least what we've seen here in Europe, is that it's difficult to get the wines, or at least to get the wines in time. And when you get the wine, I mean, this is obviously also a question, do you want to open 3, 5, 6 different bottles of wine? And it's like, it was not usually something most people do. So that is a bit of an issue. But another thing that relates to that, and that I've read in one of your articles that you've published in December, and I've heard a few more or more recent numbers that you said, like about the search terms that you actually find out about us, like that you learned about on virtual wine events, that like specific varietals like Cabernet or winemaker as a search term, as a keyword, are hardly used, if anything. Yeah. which is interesting, because obviously that's just like, that's the search history, so that is kind of like the interest that people show. But does it also reflect on the industry, people on the interest that people have in these topics? Don't they want to know about Cabernet, which I would find strange, mm-hmm. because it's like one of the most popular varieties. Or don't they want to see the winemaker? Do they want to see, like, I don't know, a master of wine talking about it rather than the person producing the wine?
Possibly. I mean, one of the things that I think, you know, and whenever you have any kind of data set, you don't want to read too much into it, because there's always limitations. And with things like Cabernet, that was very surprising. In the last 90 days, I had over 800 searches on the site, and not a single person typed in Cab or Cabernet or Cabernet Sauvignon. But yet there was events that were like, there was a South African wine event that was talking about Cabernet and Stellenbosch. You know, it was moderated by a master of wine. That was one of the most clicked on links via search. But the key words that they were using wasn't necessarily Cab. They were probably South Africa. Regions tend to get a lot of search, more often than grape varieties, I've noticed. People tend to be searching more for regions. Master of wine does get a good amount of clicks on it, because I think there is that people looking for expertise, and also moderators. Karen McNeil, she was a high search term, because she's well known for doing a lot of online events, and she has an audience and built-in trust and credibility. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that is one of the big keys, is making sure you have a good moderator. Master sommeliers also get a good amount of clicks as well. Yeah.
Which leads to the question is like, I mean, with all the experience that you have, that if you followed so much, that you gained so many insights, it's like, if someone approaches you, what do you tell them? What's the perfect wine event? What's the formula?
You really can't have a formula, because it's just, there's so much out there and there's so many different things. I mean, the best approach is to find ways to add elements of yourself into it. You know, think of your event like you think of your wine label. You know, you're competing with your wine label in a wine shop against a huge wall of wine. So the last thing you want is your label to look just like everybody else's. Mm. It's not going to get noticed. So the last thing you want to do with a virtual event is have an event that looks just like everybody else's. The same wine and cheese, the same wine and chocolate, the same wine virtual tasting with the winemaker event. You need something a little bit different. And so finding ways to incorporate what makes you unique I mean, that's just marketing 101. We don't have to reinvent the wheel with this just to do it online. But the benefit of online is you can do things a little bit more differently than what you might have done in your regular tasting room. You know, with the outshow in your event, I mentioned, you know, look for inspiration in things like, you know, Atlas Obscura. Go to their Eventbrite page and look up Atlas Obscura and the type of online events that they do, of things like, you know, lock picking classes, you know, haunted houses, old architecture, vampire bats. Every single one of those events could be turned into a wine event. You know, if you have somebody on your team that is, you know, likes old architecture in the area that they're at, having them go out on a bike for Instagram Live to different areas and talk about the events, and, you know, it, you find ways to tie in wine of like, you know, hey, we have this, you know, new rosé that we're releasing. It's a great thing in springtime, going out, you know, enjoying the walk. Let's enjoy a walk around our neighborhood. You know, just find little ways to tie that in. Then you're creating an experience where, again, having the wine is not a make or break event. You know, you mentioned the logistics of wine, and yes, a lot of things happen. You want the wine to be an enhancement of the event, but not that make or break. And so that's why it's so important to do those experiences that are a little bit different than just so narrowly focused on the wine. That's a big thing. And then again, just having a theme, just come up with something, you know, with, you know, different clones of Pinot Noir. You know, people hear folks talk about that all the time, but nobody really knows what that means. So just do an event about things like that.
I think I'm just thinking about what you're just saying. It's like, I'm just wondering, because like, obviously it's like, apart from the technical considerations, it's like, it's also obviously a question of personality, I suppose. Like, it's, if you have like a great master of wine, it's like, oh, it's like another very knowledgeable person with a great personality, or who's used to talk about wine, which isn't always something that like a winemaker is good in, or it's like, it's not the natural function of a winemaker. It's like a question is like, how important that actually is. How important are the technical aspects? How important is that the person in itself, or is it more important to be authentic as the winemaker? And it's like, do people appreciate that more?
Just wondering. Well, there definitely are folks that appreciate, you know, the authenticity of a winemaker, but you're very right. The personality does play a big role. And I would encourage, you know, folks that don't feel comfortable in their own self to being a presenter and, you know, being able to add that personality element, partner with somebody. You know, the influencers are a big thing. There's tons of folks on Instagram, and, you know, Instagram Live, even though I said that they are going down, you know, in terms of people's interest, part of it is there's such huge handicaps on Instagram Lives with, you know, the events being promoted, people knowing the events are happening. Instagram search is just completely useless to try to find interesting Instagram Lives to do. But you can find some influencers that are honing in their craft and are doing really well. And you can partner with them for an event and have them be that personality element while you provide the technical element, the authenticity, the stories behind it. It also, I mean, there's tons of great sommeliers that hopefully a lot of them are getting back to work as, you know, things start opening up, but there's a lot of restaurants that sadly aren't returning. And so there's a lot of great talent out there that could be hired to help out with these events. I mean, brilliant somms, you know, all across the world that love wine or passionate about wine that would love to be partnering with wineries or wine retailers to help do events. You know, reach out.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that like sooner or later we will return to normal. Hopefully it's going to be interesting to see how that has actually changed us, this prolonged period of staying at home, not getting in touch with people, not being social with people. It's going to be interesting to see, but like, what do you think is going to happen to wine events or like online events? Is that here to stay? Because just like sharing some kind of like research that I've done, it's like, if you look at that trends for Google search, it's like you've seen like virtual wine events, or it's like wine in general. If you look at it,
for the last 5 years, there's like it's fairly flat. And then obviously everything peaked last year when the whole thing broke out. We had like another peak towards the end of the year, but then it kind of like goes down again. It's like, so what's the future for virtual wine events? Is that going to stay or is it going to go away as well?
It will stay, but it definitely will not be that same peak again. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be the future of virtual wine events is going to be driven more by education. Like I think a lot of educators are finding that, you know, how useful it is to do these online events and reach students in all different parts. I think that's going to be the strongest point, as well as for the trade. You know, there's a lot of concern in the wine industry even before COVID about carbon footprint and airline miles. Having winemakers from Australia go to the US, go to Europe, and that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And so finding ways to do trade events with that to limit those airline miles is going to be big. So I think that's a huge part. From the consumer aspect of it, I mean, I think the built up demand to want to go back to in-person experience is going to be huge. And I think, you know, wineries focus, if I was running a winery, you know, getting ready for that tasting room surge and those experience in-person experiences, I think are going to be big. But there will always be an element of the consumers that do like that ideal of being able to, you know, I have family in different parts of the world. It'd be nice to share the same wine together if we could and have an event and attend the same event. So I think there will always be an element, but it's going to increase the premium for making this online event worth it. Yeah. Why is this attending this event and paying the money to have the wine shipped to me or to do this and that worth more than visiting you in the tasting room?
Hmm. I fully agree with you. And it's like one part of me is really looking forward to going back to the wineries in person. And I really hope for the wineries as well that things pick up quickly and go back to what they were. It's like even beyond that, because one of the themes used to be in the last couple of years, how wine tourism supports, especially smaller wineries. On the other side, I really hope that like this digital part stays with us, but like you said, in different formats, focusing on the educational aspect, because now so much education is readily available, which previously wasn't. It's like you described how you have had to go from Paris to London, which is easily accessible, but still not a stone throw away. I would have to go to Austria here from Italy to the next level. So it's not that easy, but like, so I think that helps. But I also think a very important point you made is like the aspect about sustainability, about the environmental impact all the traveling has. So I'm very curious to see how this pans out, even though I have to say that often the virtual events don't really live up to what like a wine fair can deliver. It's like that's obviously still a different thing. But I also think, like, and I think there you made some very strong points with regard to the consumer side. I think it's just great to for a small winery to reach out everywhere all around the world and potentially meet people that could eventually end up in the winery itself and doing a person in person tasting.
That's going to be really key, because just as a point that you mentioned before of how wine tourism in particular benefits small wineries.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with sustainability and, you know, people getting more worried about carbon footprint is we're going to be traveling less, but hopefully traveling better. Investing more time in planning those trips, making the most out of those trips. And so it's going to be even more important for those small wineries to try to, you know, maximize that global reach and branding to put themselves on the radar. Mm. So when those people are taking those limited amount of those precious air miles that they want to do, that you are at least on that radar and you are at least a possibility. Because the days of people traveling often and going to different places, driving around, seeing what catches their eyes or what's flipping in the guidebook, you know, that's going to wane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, travel less, but we're going to be traveling better. It's the same mantra that we think of wine. People are drinking less, but drinking better. We need to take that same mindset with wine tourism. And so you have to make those experiences worth it. You have to take advantage of planting seeds where you can.
Mm-hmm. You already described like what makes a good wine event, and eventually that helps with the second part of that question, or it's like that coin, is actually how do you make sure that you get seen, because there's so much happening right now, and when you start from scratch, I mean, like, you can still do a great wine event and no one will ever notice it because there's just so much noise. So what would you recommend, like, for a small winery or for like a small producer, like, to stand out and be heard?
Yeah, I mean, promotion and reach is definitely big. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why I developed the virtualwineevents.com, is to help be another promotional tool. To maximize that tool, and in any other platform that you're using, wineries do need to be more mindful about, you know, SEO, search engine, and showing up on Google. Google, in my opinion, is the most powerful influencer in the wine world, because everybody has their smartphones, they're Googling things. And so you want to make sure your events show up as much as they can on sites, and even on your own winery website on that. So think about strong search terms, keywords, having a good title. You know, again, virtual wine tasting with winemaker, not going to show up on much search engines. But, you know, an exploration of old vine Zinfandel, or, you know, different styles of, you know, Austrian Gruner Veltliner, you know, incorporating as many key terms as you can into a good title and a good description of the event, both on your website and on a website like mine, will help you. It will also help you on your social media promotion. You know, again, Instagram, their search sucks. Twitter is a little better. Facebook's a little better, but they're still looking at title and they're looking at the description of the event or the body of the tweet to find things to pop up on that. So trying to incorporate hashtags where you can, you know, think about those key terms. You know, you can go to Google Trends and look and see what key terms people are searching for. You know, in many ways, think like a blogger. You know, that's what bloggers do when finding good articles to write. They'll search and see what Google terms are popping up. One of the nice things in the Google search box that's really helpful is when you start typing in, you know, a question, you know, why is Zinfandel, and it autofills what people complete that sentence with. You know, one of the best advice as a blogger I ever got was write an article that answers a question. You know, do you need to, you know, with Cabernet, do you need to blank Cabernet? Do you need to decant Cabernet? Do you need to age Cabernet? Having an event that answers that question is more likely to show up in Google search. So some of those techniques will help with the promotion, but you have to promote where you can, and you have to promote, give yourself time to promote. One of the things that shocked me so much on the website is how many times I have an event submitted that's happening tomorrow or even later today. That really doesn't give much time for the event to catch people's attention. It doesn't give time for Google to index that page on my site to help it show up more on search on it. You ideally at least give yourself a month to promote it. I think that's more ideal, or at least 2 weeks. Give yourself time to promote an event.
Yeah, I suppose like events are not like last year, when a lot of the events that popped up were really kind of like spontaneous decisions to, well, like, we've got like more time on our hands, or it's like, we need to do something, let's do something. So you should have a bit of lead time there, and not just do promotion as an afterthought. And I reckon that, like, you mentioned that you've done a bit of freelance consulting there, you would be open to do more freelance consulting, even if it's not just free, hopefully, because I think you really should be rewarded for all the hard work you do. And I'll put everything on the show notes, obviously, how people can find out more about you and where to find you and how to contact you. You also mentioned that, like, both of your websites are free. There's no marketing. But do you have any plans? It's like, how do you want to evolve them? How do you want to develop them for the near and distant future? Or is it still
in progress? I mean, I'm blessed in my position with my wife's work, not necessarily needing to have my blog or have the site be a source of income. And so as long as that's the case, you know, I think I will try to keep it that way, because I feel the biggest use is to be tools. on it. I mean, especially the site, you know, with virtual wine events, you know, having that data, that organic feedback and data, any winery at any point right now, today, can go to the website and see what's trending. You know, we have a trending event section, also trending replays with video replay links, because people are looking for things to watch. We live in a YouTube world now. People like watching old webinars and old events. And so they can see what in real time, because it gets updated every hour, what has the highest buzz rating, what people are clicking on. They can search for a term. If they're thinking of doing an event, let's say they want to do a bingo night or a scavenger hunt. They can search those terms and see what other events have people have done on that. Utilize that tool on there. I want to keep that as again, organic and from outside of, free from outside manipulation as I can.
Yeah, it's like I wouldn't even go as far as like outside manipulation, but it's like having worked in technology for a long time, I have learned, or it's like many people before, that nothing, or it's like hardly anything, is really free. In that sense, you're a true exception to the rule that you do all this hard work for free, obviously with the scope of learning yourself. But
I benefit a lot from learning. I mean, the insights and the data of being able to see how things are shifting, that's very valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it enhances my own learning and enrichment.
Great stuff. Amber, thank you so much for joining me today. It's great talking to you, and hopefully we can continue the conversation in the future. And best of luck with the diploma.
Thank you.
And that's all for today. We touched upon a lot of points, and you can find additional information as well as all the links in the show notes at jollycellarmaster.com, together with the details for getting in touch with Amber LeBeau. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review and make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Jolly good.